so many kids would have a better life today because this reporter decided to ask for 2 data points for every child that was born. And I find it beautiful that, you know, that you can use data to improve lives. And that's the kind of work that someday I aspire to do.
Unmute, the podcast from Design Up. We will feature issues that bother us, inspire us, or intrigue us designers. Subscribe to Unmute, where you get your podcasts. And enjoy the ride. Now, over to our host, Shiva.
I studied graphic design at the design school way before the internet, or even a computer for that matter. We graphic designers were taught to make it easy to consume and comprehend any content. It is difficult to tell a story well, and that's why I admire journalists. They are able to construct an engagement between themselves and the reader. They are able to substantiate and tell the truth as they should. Okay, not all of them, but most of them do. And that's why I was excited to meet Gurman Bhatia. In this age of post-truth and fake news, it was good meeting her.
I am Gurman Bhatia. I work for Reuters in Singapore, where I tell stories with code. What that means, the way a photojournalist might use pictures to tell stories, a traditional reporter might use words, I use data visualization and code. So it's most of the stories that I do are highly visual in nature. The key aspect is I use data to uncover interesting information and present it in non-traditional formats.
So Gurman, how did it all begin? What did you study and how did you get to the idea of data and storytelling together?
So I have 2 degrees in journalism, none in design or computer science. How I ended up doing what I do is weird and tricky. Undergrad was in journalism, Delhi University. There, I was actually not sure whether I want to do journalism at all. But I ended up working for the student newspaper. And I was like, oh my God, this is so exciting. I was figuring out how policy was working in the university and just working with the team to find out what's wrong in what college. I love the rush of hitting a published deadline, making sure every week, and that kind of confirmed that this is something I want to do in life. So then I went on to do my master's in New York at Columbia University. And when I went there, they ask you to pick courses. And I knew a bit of photo, I knew a bit of video, I knew a bit of audio. So I was like, okay, what is it that I don't know? And there was a course in data. They were going to use R and the things like that to introduce using data for stories. So that, because that seemed something new and something I didn't know, I took that class. And then later on, I took this another class in interactive design and storytelling. And that class introduced you to the building blocks of HTML, CSS, and JavaScript, and kind of taught a little bit of how to structure an interactive story. I remember the first day of that class when I was sitting in this class and my professor was introducing what we are going to do and what he's going to teach. You know, it was a moment of connect that this is something I want to do. So it ended up being like a good right place, right time. And after that, I just kept teaching myself. So what do you study to do this? You use a Stack Overflow and you Google everything and you learn on your own, on the job.
So every journalist seems to start the journey with reporting. How did your reporting start?
I remember my first reporting class at Columbia. So basically, there's a reporting module in which you're supposed to go out in the city and find stories. As I was doing that, there was one story I was working on for that class. And I went outside. I did my reporting. I came back. And I gave my research notes to my professor, who basically acts as an editor. And he asked me things like, okay, what color were the walls? How did the room smell? How many people could sit? It was about a restaurant. So how many people could sit in the restaurant? What sounds were there? And I was like, I have no idea. And he's like, okay, that means you need to go back. And I went back. It was like far away from where I was. But so I traveled to that place again. See, he taught me this very good lesson that whenever you are reporting and you walk into a room, before you do anything else, just notice your surroundings. They matter so much. Because when you're writing, if instead of pointing to a story, you want to place the reader in the room, you need to observe the room yourself first. That lesson stuck by me. And even today, just sitting down and thinking for a minute about where you are, observing those spaces. Good lesson.
Now let's talk about the first story. What happened in your first story?
So my first internship in the US, I was with an investigative team. And when I walked into the internship, my editor asked me, what is it that you want to achieve in these 6 months? And I said, I want to walk out with one investigative piece. That's it. Nothing else. That's my goal. Everything else is an added bonus. And he's like, yes, that is achievable. We'll work on it. So at that time, they were focusing on halfway houses. So what happens is if you are suffering from addiction and after recovery, you need to be in a halfway house before you can be in your normal life in the society. It helps either transition period. So South Florida has a whole halfway house industry. And there's corruption within it. People run both halfway houses and addiction center and like rehabilitation centers. And their goal is to kind of keep reaping person's insurance. So they want the person to fail. So it was all extremely mismanaged in the state. And the law couldn't do much to save it. So there I spent like 2-3 months looking at different cities and in the area and kind of finding out what their regulations were towards halfway houses. So I filed 33, 34 FOIA requests, which are the American version of an RTI. Some people sent me records over mail. Some required me to come to the office and manually scan them. Some people would not let me take any copies at all. So like I had extensive notes. The idea was to document every halfway house in the area. And I did that, and that helped us in other reporting projects as well. We were able to find networks of different people running multiple halfway houses. And at the same time, kind of finding out whose requests kept getting rejected and things like that. And in the end, it came up with like a full page newspaper story. We also visited some of these halfway houses and like spoke to the residents to figure out how they were, what the living, we also observed the spaces, where it was set up, what did it look like. That was, I think, quite a meaningful reporting experience. And I also like personally feel that these hyper-local stories have the most impact, are the most meaningful, because they matter. This reporting also helped another story with which in turn helped the federal government to take an owner down. So like it's satisfying and it's meaningful when you're part of such a work. So I think, yes, that was my first experience.
What is the day in the life of a data journalist? How does your day go? How does it start? What happens during the day? And what do you do?
Early in the morning, I have a call with my team and we kind of brainstorm on what's happening, if there's anything important that's happening in the day that can be breaking news situations. Earthquake is happening. A cyclone is happening. Like if there are major events happening that we need to address. So that is the first point of inquiry. The second thing after that is we talk about broader ideas on the call. If they're long-term things we need to be thinking about, if we need to think about, for example, recently we completed a year of COVID. So if there's something we can do with that. So if elections are happening in a certain country, we'll talk about if something is approaching, upcoming events we know are coming. So we'll discuss things like that. And then after that, it's up to me. It changes. Every day is different based on the story that I'm working on and based on the stage I am at the story. So my work, typically, I would say any data story is three step. First is data extraction. Second is data analysis, and third is the visualization aspect. The first two take the majority of my time. The visualization is the easiest. So today, for example, all I'm doing is research for a story. I'm not writing any code at all. I'm just reading research papers. I am talking to people and trying to understand the subject. And that changes. One day I might just be, the whole day might just be about writing code and building visualizations. Some days I might be on a project for a week, but suddenly there's a breaking news situation and that's on the back burner and I'm working on a breaking news story. But all of this makes it actually exciting because every day is different and you're not bored of doing the same thing over and over again. In my current job, for example, for the past 1 year, 99% of what I've done is the coronavirus. So I definitely am experiencing that fatigue. But otherwise, days are more colorful. In my previous job, it would be when I was at the Hindustan Times, one day I would publish a story about Bollywood songs. And the next day I would be working about riots. You're not restricted to a beat. That you get to learn about different things and different subjects as you research for those stories.
Bollywood songs, pretty intriguing. So what do you know about Bollywood songs that probably I don't or lots of people don't?
You probably know it anecdotally, but I proved it with data. I did a story when I was at the Hindustan Times about Bollywood songs, showing that how the female solo had decreased over time. So in the 1950s or 1940s, 75% or roughly 70% of solo songs were sung by women. And today that's barely 25-30%. So think about this industry that was dominated by women. Wow, like early on, and now it's changed over time. So I basically scraped a database. And then I cleaned the database, which took forever. Then I manually tagged which singer was male, which singer was female. Because if I put in a program to do it, the program might tag heavier voices such as a Usha Uttap as male, which we don't want. I want more accuracy. So I myself tagged those people. And in the end, I was able to make this chart, which shows how it had gone down over time. And then I spoke to people who research Bollywood or work in the industry to why this had happened. And people had insights such as how lip sync has gone down. So even though you have movies with female protagonists, it's not necessary that they'll a woman would be singing because it's not lip sync. They're just doing their things and their song running in the background. For example, Queen, all of them are male songs. So Arijit Singh might sing, Amit Trivedi might sing the song, or Arijit Singh might sing the song. but it's actually a woman who's the lead of the film. At the same time, another thing that happened was that the family structure has kind of diminished in the storyline itself. So earlier you used to have the mother, one song, the sister, one song, the love interest, one song, the vamp, one song. Now those characters have also diminished from the storyline. It's more individualistic. So that is also reduced. There was interesting tidbits about the cultural shifts within the industry itself that can cause like a small part of the movie and the music score to change.
Wow. That's quite a story. So, Gurman, what comes first? Is it story or the data? Like, for example, do you start with how can I tell the story with data? Or do you start with how can I make this data into a story? What really happens?
So generally, I think it goes both ways. Most commonly, I know the story roughly and I look for the data. Sometimes, basically, I have a hypothesis and I go on to check if that hypothesis is true. A lot of times that hypothesis is actually not true, which is also okay. Then we close it then and there. And very rarely do I actually start with the data, but I treat data like a human being. So the way I interview a subject while during my reporting, a data set is also something that I interview for my story. So I have a bunch of questions based on what the columns are and how it's structured. And I will just one by one do those inquiries, pointed inquiries from the data set. And sometimes I find something, sometimes I don't. A lot of times I go on with the hypothesis and I try to find if there's data that actually can answer that question. So a lot of times that data does not exist. We say this in our community that your dream data set does not exist. And it's extremely true. It absolutely does not exist. For example, in India, ever since March, we haven't been releasing mortality data. Otherwise, every month, the government would put out numbers on people are dying of which condition. Since March, we don't have those numbers. So there are so many stories that we can't tell. So I would say it's not the data or the story, it's a question. It starts with a question most of the time. That's the starting point.
And would you say whether the answer aligns to what you're thinking or not, it can still make a story?
Yes. So for example, I remember that there was last year or sometime a kind of typhoon that was going to go through Japan. And Tokyo, it was going to hit. And we thought it's going to be a big story because the eye of the storm was going to go through Tokyo. Big deal, big city, extremely dense. But at the same time, they're also the Japanese, so very well planned. So we were totally prepped up. I had like pulled satellite imagery and set up an animation to show the storm going through it. And we were prepared. But nothing happened. It did go through it, but there was no major damage. And we were like, do we do a story or do we not do a story? And I was like, even though it was such a strong storm, nothing happened, I think that in itself is also a story. But in this case, yes, that was worth doing. But sometimes there simply is no story. Pass. And that's fine. Half of what I do is basically passes at data. No, this is nothing here. Next.
Okay, let's now move to visualizations. They can be quite demanding, right? It's based on the kind of data that you have at hand. So do you create your own visualizations or do you collaborate with somebody else for your visualizations?
Most of it I do. So it's not like I can't make them. I can definitely make them. I have the capability to ideate and make these visualizations. But because a lot of things are happening, you are looking at scraping or just collecting data bit. You're looking at the analysis. You're looking at presentation. There might be more advanced server tech that might be needed if we're talking about large data sets such as that for COVID. Depending on what kind of a project it is, what kind of time constraints there are, because in news, you also have to hit deadlines. Timeliness is a very important factor. We collaborate to make things happen faster. I am very good at using D3 to write custom visualizations, but I might not be so good at picking colors for those visualizations. So my editor is great at that. So because I work for an international organization, those kind of inputs come more naturally and we have those resources. So we try and use them. For example, for our coronavirus coverage, we have been collecting data ourselves for all countries. And it first started with one person in Beijing. Right now, we have a team of people in Bangalore doing it. It's very hard for one person to do it all in a small amount of time.
So this is a graphic designer's angst, which is like me, right? How do you decide that this visualization is right for this kind of story? Is there some kind of a method to it?
When in doubt, make a bar chart. But like bar charts, actually, we might think they're boring or whatever, but they are used everywhere because they are effective. They drive the point home. They're easy to read. But that is when you're actually thinking of traditional visualizations. So a lot of what I do is non-traditional visualization. So, for example, there's one story we did in which we had a photographer in Delhi set up a camera on a rooftop and he had it set to click a picture every hour. So every hour it would click a picture and we had it set up for a month or like a month and a half for pollution season, essentially. And the goal was that I make a line chart of PM 2.5 and I say, oh my God, levels have spiked.
A quick explanation here. PM 2.5 is particulate matter that are less than 2.5 microns. They hang in the air as pollution. Now let's get back to her story.
But what in the world do those spike level mean and what do they look like? So showing two pictures where the PM 2.5 is 20 versus 800 or 700, you see the difference in the picture itself. And that is so a much more powerful way to communicate that difference than making that line chart. So it's a lot about ideating and finding these ways to tell different stories, to show the scale, the dearth of women in electoral politics. We put a grid of all people contesting and you have to scroll through lots and lots and lots of men before you get to the first woman. We come up with ideas, we try them. If they work, great. If they don't work, we try something else. So it's a collective effort, to be honest, where we come up with ideas and we try them. There is no method to it. It is an extremely creative enterprise. Can you just keep at it, sketch, repeat, sketch, repeat, sketch, repeat.
So good. Let me ask you a question from the UX side of things, right? Do you test at all? Do you test what you design for comprehension?
Ideally, we should. We never have time to do that. We did it for one project recently. We launched this global tracker for the COVID. Basically, I had a visualization earlier. And then we wanted to redesign it to be something that could be updated because the story is not going anywhere. And also to build something that can evolve as the story changes. Right now we are talking about testing. Tomorrow we will talk about vaccination. So the story will evolve, but it will still be the same story. So we wanted to build something from scratch that was more comprehensive and would let us look at all these things. We spent a long time doing it. We spent 2-3 months but it was also just three people building it. And for that project, actually, we went on and we showed it to a bunch of people. But there also, we didn't have the time to do more structured tests. Did show and tells within the team, within other teams in Reuters. I showed it to a bunch of friends and we looked for feedback if people were getting it or not. Of course, the best test for me is to show it to my own parents. And if they get it, I feel successful in life. I'm like, okay, now I've created a good visualization. Visualizations are hard to understand, which is why bar charts are great, because if people understand it. Even after we publish, we'll get feedback. So there's one very effective tool that helps people to read a visualization, and those are annotations. And we use them heavily in whatever we do. We annotate as much as we can, because reading a paragraph above a visualization is different, but reading context on the visualization is much more powerful and much more impactful. There are people who are much better at this who say that interactivity should not be imposed. Though that's a natural instinct. So we don't try to hide things. We show the most important things. And then, of course, if you want to engage further, maybe you can interact in with it. But first, I will tell you what you need to know. And I will not hide information for you. So annotations are effective way to do that.
So recently, of what you have seen, what are some of the stories that you wish you had done? Some great examples of data-led stories.
I don't know recently, but every time I look at a story that has had actual impact and improved lives, I always aspire that, okay, someday that's the kind of work I want to be doing. When I talk to people and I try to convince them that how analysis is so much more important than visualization, I give this example of the story that came out of a local newspaper in Wisconsin, the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, and a reporter there called Ellen Gabler got a tip that kids in one hospital, the kids that were born in a certain hospital, were growing up and developing some birth defect, some kind of deficiencies and things like that. So as she was investigating it, she learned that what happens is when a child is born, within 24 to 48 hours, they prick the foot of the child and take a sample, blood sample, and that sample is sent to labs for testing. And it needs to be sent within 2-3 days or something like that. You need to get the result. And if you can treat early on for certain conditions. Now, those were the guidelines. And she learned that these kids were purely getting sick because that test was coming late. It was coming a week later or something. So by that time, it's already too late. Like, that's interesting. I wonder how the rest of the state is doing. And she learned that there was a problem in the entire state. Like, hospitals were not following this. I wonder how the rest of the states do. It was a local story. And then she went on and filed FOIA requests to all states. Some replied, some didn't. Some 30-something replied. And she learned that barring two states, everybody had this problem. And then she started calling up hospitals and was asking them that, are you aware that this is happening and whatnot? And the hospital said, thanks for pointing it out. And they corrected it actually even before the story was published. So many kids would have a better life today because this reporter decided to ask for 2 data points for every child that was born. And I find it beautiful that, you know, that you can use data to improve lives. And that's the kind of work that someday I aspire to do. This is the direct impact that you see in subtle ways. Of course, when I'm working on COVID, the goal is that even if one person is more informed because of me, my job is done. Like, the idea is where misinformation is rampant and nobody really knows what's happening. Somebody says something, some another outlet says something else, WhatsApp forward says something else. If they can be reliable, well-communicated information out there, there is value in that for sure. Visualization-wise, Harry Stevens, a former colleague of mine, did this wonderful explanation of how social distancing works sometime in April, May, and fantastic piece. So that was very well done. So well done that ultimately they decided to translate it in multiple languages. So there's a Hindi version out there as well. So basically he did a simulation in which dots move around and it shows how movement will cause the spread. And if the dots stop moving, the spread stops. I'm sure like hundreds would have stayed at home because they decided to translate it to multiple languages. Some leaders in Brazil showed it in press conferences. To change behavior, it can be a very powerful method.
So how important is it for a data journalist to be a writer or even a designer to be a writer?
It's not important at all. So if it's a reporter who writes wonderfully and will dig deep in a story and that person doesn't understand design, it's fine. That person is very good at what they do. Like I, for example, cannot write well. I can report, I can't write that well. Like it's not my strength. And that's fine. Why it can be helpful, though, is that with things changing, the intersection of skills really helps. And also goes to the whole narrative of how generalists will go further in life in the future, etc. Because everything is so connected. And especially if it's a story that you're highly invested in, you can have a vision of design for that as well. So one thing definitely is useful is that as journalists, we are often taught that a good journalist can cover every story. So it's not important for me as a journalist to be deep in everything. But a good reporter, I truly believe, can cover anything because if they ask the right questions and if they're curious enough and they're invested enough and they read enough. And you keep learning about new things. And these random knowledges across a spectrum are useful when you don't realize.
I think that's quite true. There's a friend of mine who said, collect the dots, keep collecting them, and they will connect themselves at some point of time. What is the future of storytelling for publications? Telling stories with data or otherwise. I mean, the new technologies, new personalization techniques used. What are your thoughts on that?
So there are like, I think, 2-3 aspects to this. One, of course, is different devices. Currently, of course, we're talking about phones, but slowly, and phones are my biggest nightmare because I was previously had to design for the screen. Now I have to design for a tablet screen and a mobile screen. And I think of all these visualizations that look great on desktop, but can no way work on mobile. My life is very hard because of phones. People might want visualizations for watches. We need to focus on smart speakers and we need to focus on smart watches and wearables of all kinds. So the devices in itself will require a different kind of storytelling. Podcasts people have been focusing on because smart speakers are becoming extremely popular. Kids, for example, are going to engage with a speaker and their Alexas much earlier than they would with a phone. Because they can ask questions to the speaker. So those changes are going to happen. AR, VR kind of technologies that the Western world is using. I was talking earlier about pointing to a story and putting a person in a story. These technologies actually enable to put your audience in a place. But in an audience like India, I think the bigger challenge is also to make things that I do more accessible to all kinds of audiences in different languages. I don't see good data visualizations in Hindi yet. I know the Malayalam Manorama does very good work when it comes to data viz, but that's the only vernacular newspaper I'm aware of. But creating interactive experiences for your phone, for your desktop, that's something that needs resources, and most of these places don't have the resources to do. A lot of readership is in these other non-English speaking elite spaces. And I think creating good quality content for them is very important.
But this is also about supply and demand, right? In the sense that don't the readers ask for these kind of visualizations, these methods of storytelling? Don't you think that'll improve it? I'm sure in Kerala, the readers demand more, and that's why Malayala Manorama is responding with it. What is your thought on that?
It definitely is a people demand thing. And also, when I was working at this media institute once, it was my first internship in the US. And there was this question that one of the people, senior people, asked me and believed in. I wanted to look for media deserts, which are places that don't have newspapers and local newspapers, because local newspapers, according to me, are the most important to your day-to-day life. Because I care more about what's happening in my backyard and less so on what's happening in the parliament, because it's not going to have a direct impact in my life. And she had this question that if there is a correlation between access to newspapers and news to voter turnout, because ultimately, and there are spaces that say this, that the job of a newspaper in a democracy is to create more informed voters. You want people to make better decisions so that governance improves, and like that whole cycle stays intact. So Kerala is also one of those places where voter turnout is good. So it could be so. I'm not sure. I wasn't able to prove it, but it definitely is a thing that more, if your readers are more engaged, they will demand things and they will appreciate when they like things as well.
So I know a lot of people who are interested in data journalism, data visualization, and so on. So where do they start? Where can they go and get inspiration?
Where should they start? They can start at multiple places. I can list few. Subreddit data is beautiful for inspiration. If you like arts and culture and sports, pudding.cool, they tell visually data-driven essays. They would look at what dialogues are used by women versus men, what words are more common, what verbs are more common in scripts. So things like that, intricacy, cultural quirks. What is the shade card of Vogue covers to see how Black women don't appear on the cover at all? So things like that. They use visuals very well. There are, of course, outlets, news outlets that do a lot of good work. Reuters, start there. I work with some very smart people, and they do a lot of good work. The New York Times, Washington Post, Wall Street Journal, Economist, FT. These are things that you can go for inspiration. But other than that, the process, how I learned was I just made things. And as I was making things, I Googled things because I wanted to make a map of a certain kind. And I didn't know how to make that map. So I just Googled on how to make that map and learned in the process. Because I really want to answer this question. So I'm going to do everything in my capacity to answer this question. And that's a much more engaged way of doing something than anything else. Try. There are communities you can join. There is something called the Data Visualization Society that has a Slack. You can join that, engage with the community there. There is Data Meet in India. That's a bunch of mostly people actually who work in the civil society and have a look at open source data in India. So again, a very good community to talk to if you're looking for data in India. If you write code and want to make visualizations in JavaScript, D3.js, which is a very common visualization library most people use. It's my bread and butter, essentially. And it was actually made in a newsroom. It came out of the New York Times. So yeah, I think just being in these spaces helps. Interacting with the community helps. Then after that, if you're doing personal projects and you feel like any of your projects deserves a home, just send pictures to places. And if someone might pick it up, who knows? I receive emails of students and people who are tinkering with DataWiz all the time with some of their samples. And I try and give feedback when I can.
That was Gurman Bhatia, a data journalist from Reuters. To know more about her and see some of her stories on Lata Mangeshkar's Songs for Every Mood, Hong Kong Protests, A Day in the Indian Parliament, or how India picks its president, you can visit gurmanbhatia.com. This is Unmute from Design Up. I am the creator and host, Shiva Vishwanathan. Executive producers are Jay Datta, Narayan Gopalan, and Shiva Vishwanathan. This podcast will not be possible without Rasagya Sharma, Praveen Pebam, Saloni Sabnis, Ripul Kumar and Dharmesh Ba. This podcast has been recorded at our homes with a Scarlett 2i2 third gen studio and Steinberg UR22C. It's edited on GarageBand and distributed with Buzzsprout. Thank you, and till we meet again, goodbye.